All right, good evening, folks. Welcome to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. This is Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live, July the 27th of 05. Sorry I missed it yesterday, Jonathan. I was in traffic up to my eyeballs coming from Houston.
Turn my mic on there.
There you go.
I guess I expected it to do it itself.
Of course, if evolution's true, it should.
Yeah, but of course, right here, we need a little bit of intelligent design. Not that I'm calling myself intelligent. But we got to listen to the post-debate comments between you, James Sundquist, and Dr. Danny Faulkner on the Hugh Ross debate. We had, this is amazing, we had atheists writing in saying, we're rooting for Kent Hovind on this one. I mean, bizarre to see an atheist or an evolutionist say that. This thing, because it's so ridiculously, it's just crazy the way Hugh Ross is, you know, misconstruing.
I know,
scripture.
Poor guy. Anyway, folks, you can join us on the program. We're the people here who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. The evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. And we've got a few skeptics out there that wish I wouldn't say that. I know. I wish it wasn't true. I wouldn't say it if it wasn't true, Jonathan.
I have no idea what you just said. I was...
About the dumbest and most dangerous religion?
Yes.
Evolution is. Okay. We cover a couple things here, a couple of housekeeping things, and then you can call into the program, 850-479-DINO, 850-479-3466, or 877-479-DINO. Either one will get you in. And then go to extension 136. Or if somebody answers the phone, I believe there are still some secretaries in there, then you can say, oh, I want to be on the radio program. And they'll put you through to 136 to our lovely Jonathan sitting here at the keyboard.
We really do got a different, we got to get a different word instead of lovely.
Form. Instead of lovely?
Yeah.
What would you prefer? Intelligent. You're intelligent. Handsome. Dedicated.
I have no idea. We're going to have to work on that one.
I have to think of some things. Okay.
Taking suggestions on AOL Instant Messenger, Dr. Dino Live is our screen name.
Suggestions for how to dress Jonathan as the original, the only.
I don't know, not to dress me. I dress quite fine right now, I think.
T-shirts and blue jeans and tennis shoes and a hat all the time. I mean, not the same T-shirt, but...
I don't know. There are some days, you know.
I understand. Okay. Anyway, you can call in and be on the program, 850-479-DINO or Instant Messages. How do they do that, Jonathan?
Again, that's AOL Instant Messenger. You got to kind of slur those three letters together. AOL Instant Messenger. Dr. Dino Live is our screen name. DrDinoLive, and that will come straight to me, and I will filter them through to Dr. Hovind over here.
There you go. Okay, we are reading now from the website ORI, which is Office of Research Integrity. DHHS. Now, what does that stand for, Jonathan?
Department of Human and Health. Services,
DHHS, some kind of department, .gov/misconduct. Do you realize, I know this is hard to believe, Jonathan, because we've got people out there who believe that if this person is a scientist and have a lab coat and a clipboard, they are above reproach, they never sin, their sweat doesn't even stink. I mean, they're holy.
I've heard it, yeah.
Okay. We are finding it's just quite not quite true, okay?
Yeah, I've heard of such rumors.
Here's a case summary from this website, ori.dhhs.gov, about, we've been reading one every day. John's here with me in the room and his wife, Jan. There are hundreds and hundreds of cases where scientists have lied to get grant money, falsified reports to please the person who sponsored their research. And these are the same scientists that some of the skeptics and atheists rely on.
Oh, yeah, they call them, you know, more than men, less than liars or something. You know, these are the guys that are, they call it scientific, quote, misconduct.
Yeah, I mean, they're holy. I mean, you know.
And you see the punishments these guys get. It's kind of like, just don't talk to me for a couple weeks.
Right.
You know.
But in the minds of some people, if a scientist is talking, it's like the Pope speaking ex cathedra, you know. He cannot lie. Everything is correct. Here we go. Case summary. How do you pronounce this guy's name? J-I-A-N-H-U-A. They call him James. Jiahua. Last name X-U. Would that be pronounced Zu, I guess? X-Zu. I believe X is pronounced Z in front of a U. Who cares? Okay. Johann Zu here, whatever his name is. James Zu. According to the Department of Health and Human Services at the Office of Research Integrity, James Zu, University of Alberta, Based on the University of Alberta report, the respondents' admissions and additional analysis conducted by ORI in its oversight review, the U.S. Department of Public Health, blah, 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 they found this Mr. Zhu, a former technician at Alberta University, University of Alberta, engaged in scientific misconduct in research funded by the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute. Here's a person doing research to help people be healthy. You know, the heart and blood are really important to health.
Yeah, the lungs are pretty good, too.
And lungs are important, too.
I've got two of them, I mean.
Yep. And he's going to engage in misconduct. Mr. Zhu performed experiments on the enzyme lipid phosphate phosphatase 1, LPP1 for short, from a family of enzymes that affected signal transduction, and it goes on and on describing all what he did here. Mr. Zhu admits that he alone was responsible for falsifying the reports. He was observed deliberately falsifying other colleagues' experiments. You mean, oh, Jonathan, I thought this guy was a scientist now. Surely they wouldn't lie to us, would they?
He's an evil scientist that works in his basement and drinks hot cocoa.
Oh, no. Mr. Zhu committed scientific misconduct by falsifying data for figures 1A, 1B, 1C, 2B, 2D, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, and 8A. Oh, I can't believe he did 8A also. That's horrible. That he published in James Zhu et al., and I've got the name of the article here. You can read it for yourself on the website. He falsified data. I got paragraph after paragraph about him, about what he lied, okay? He's a scientist and he lied. Mr. Zhu has entered into a voluntary exclusion agreement in which he has voluntarily agreed for a period of 4 years, beginning November of 2003, to exclude himself from any contracting or subcontracting with any agency of the United States government. Also, to exclude himself from serving in any advisory capacity to PHS, including but not limited to service on any PHS advisory committee. So, he can't work for the government, John, but he's probably working for some university, falsifying their reports.
Mm-hmm.
Scientific misconduct. Oh, well. For those of you out there that put all your trust and faith in scientists, I think you might be smarter to put your trust and faith in God's word.
These guys could come here and build fences, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Dig ditches, crawl under the house, fix a pipe or something.
I still haven't been underneath the house. I hear everyone goes underneath the house. I haven't been there yet.
You need to crawl under the house, John. We start people off there to keep them humble, you know?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, works pretty good. Here we go. MSNBC.com. Article entitled, Was It Sasquatch? DNA Test Will Tell. From 2 days ago, July 25th of 05, Reuters News Report. Vancouver, British Columbia. The debate over the existence of Sasquatch, a.k.a. Bigfoot, an ape-like creature said to haunt the wilderness of Western Canada, among other places, has entered the world of modern DNA testing. A laboratory will test hair samples that several residents of Tellson, Yukon, say were left when the large but so far mythological creature made a late-night run through their community in early July. University of Alberta. Oh, no, Jonathan, it's the same University of Alberta where Mr. Zhu works.
Really?
I bet he was running with a hairy suit on, trying to run away from these guys that are after him for lying.
Probably not a hippie or something, is he? Looks like a Cousin It from... Oh, what is that?
Oh, yeah.
Is it the Monsters? The family?
Monsters. The Monsters.
There we go.
Cousin It. With the long hair. So, I bet one of these professors is running around either with a hairy suit on or maybe some of the hippies from the 60s that haven't come in yet, you know? They've been out there smoking their dope and their hair's real long.
They got the munchies, decided to run through town 10:30 in the night.
Yeah. Tell you what, if somebody runs around southern, you know, Florida or southern Alabama with a suit on, a hairy suit on, some redneck's going to plug up full of holes, man. I tell you what. Some people say, well, all these Bigfoot sightings are just all, you know, people dressed up in suits. Well, some of them certainly are. Okay, no question. But, man, you would have a real short life expectancy if you did that down here.
I know. Well, people don't dress up as deer whenever they go out hunting. I wonder why, you know.
One guy told me he took his mother-in-law hunting and bought her a special hat with antlers on it.
Hey, all right.
Yeah. I don't know why I did that. Okay, here we go. University of Alberta, wildlife geneticist David Coltman, who agreed to do the test as a favor to a colleague, said Monday that scientists have cataloged the DNA of nearly all large animals in the Yukon, such as bears and bison. So we'll compare it all, or compare it to all of that, and if it doesn't match anything, then it's potentially interesting, said Coltman, who suspects the hare was actually left behind by a much more mundane Yukon bison. Anyway, might have a Sasquatch hare. Interesting. You know, John, I've interviewed 10 people now, face-to-face, who swear they have seen one.
The next little thing they said is, if Sasquatch is indeed a primate, then we would expect the sample to be closer to humans or chimpanzees or gorillas. So it's got to fit into their evolutionary worldview somehow.
And if it's nylon or rayon, we'll know it's definitely a fake suit.
Yeah.
The guy running around. Okay. Good. Child vaccination rate hits record high, CNN.com. Almost 81% of the nation's toddlers are getting vaccinated on time. I'm sorry to hear about that. A record level that comes 5 years ahead of government expectations, federal health officials reported Tuesday. That's a tribute to the fact that parents recognize the benefits and values of these vaccines and are protecting their children, said Dr. Kachai, acting vaccine chief at the Center for Disease Control. We can't be complacent, he cautioned. There's much more work to be done. Inoculations still lag in pockets of the country. Worst in the nation was Nevada, where 68% of youngsters got their main series of vaccination, and fewer black and Hispanic children up to date on their shots than white children. But overall, Tuesday's news was good. 80% of the people got vaccinated. You know, before anybody gets their kid vaccinated, they should go to marytocco.com, T-O-C-C-O, marytocco.com, or vaclib, V-A-C-L-I-B.org, or knowledgeofhealth.com. And they should read what's really happening with these vaccines. Man. Or go to our website, drdino.com, and get some of the books on there about vaccines. I recommend people make an informed, intelligent decision. And when you read what's happening, and kids getting autism from these vaccines, I think it'll scare you. Or at least make you stop and think twice. Okay. Here's one. Why cats don't cotton to sweets. ScientificAmerican.com. Now, was this done with a government grant, Jonathan, where somebody tried to figure out why cats don't like sugar?
I'm sure it was. That or tax dollars or something like that.
No, you got to spend this stuff wisely, you know. Probably cost them $1 million to figure out. But, you know, they did spend, I forget what it was, like $7 million or something, to figure out why different races of people smell the way they do. Black, Chinese, and white, their sweat smells different. So they spent millions to find out why.
I smell different because I probably use Axe. It's called Axe underarm deodorant. So it's actually like a $3 difference between me and someone else, probably.
Okay.
Millions of dollars.
I could have told him that.
Now, in high school, we had a teacher. What was his name? I don't know. He was the coolest teacher there was. Mr. Something. Who knows? Who cares? Anyway, he was actually going through and telling us about some of the crazy things that have been listed as government experiments, and I don't know if these are true or not, but there were some really bizarre things like why a dog chases a ball or, you know, the testing the flow rate of ketchup into a jar or something like that. Just really crazy things. I don't know if those are accurate, but he got a list from somewhere.
There's a website called, it deals with government pork, where the money goes. It'll scare you to think, who on earth did this, you know? What were they thinking, you know? Okay, here we go. Quickly, why cats don't cotton to sweets, and then we'll take your calls. 850-479-DINO or AOL Instant Message Us at Dr. Dino Live. All right. Government misconduct, I got that one. And we'll just do another one of those tomorrow. Okay. Here's one more. Why cats don't cotton to sweets. The lure of sweets is the downfall of many a dieter. Cats, however, are indifferent to sugar. A trait that is rare in the animal in the mammal kingdom. Now scientists have figured out why. Oh, here it is, Jonathan. Scientists.
Mm-hmm. Why would this trait be so rare? I mean, shouldn't they be able to find like a scarlet lion throughout the entire clade there and figure out the whole path of this?
How sugar hating evolved.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, break time. We'll figure out why cats don't like sweets after the break, folks. We'll be back in 1 minute 30 seconds. Stay with us.
If you're like me, you believe the FBI has never apologized, never had any thoughts of regret about Ruby Ridge. Well, here's FBI negotiator Fred Lansley. Hear what he says.
We fouled up in front of the entire world, and it should never have happened. And I think it was just a really disappointing day for the FBI.
The FBI later admits to covering up facts during the court case, and the rules of engagement are deemed unconstitutional.
Well, the FBI may not have officially apologized for what went on at Ruby Ridge, but it was impressive to hear Fred Lansley speak out against his bosses. That's almost never done. This DVD, new to me, is really great. Lots of good background information about the Weaver case and Randy himself showing up and telling his story. You can have a copy if you write to me, P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444.
How old is the Grand Canyon? Find out next on today's Creation Moments. And now, here's our Creation Moments host, Ian Taylor.
Who would have thought that squirrels would tell us how old the Grand Canyon is? Yet, that's what creation scientists tell us that the tassel-eared squirrel, which lives near the rim of the canyon in Arizona, has done. Tassel-eared squirrels are found on both the north and south rims of the canyon. Scientists have assumed that the squirrels were there before the canyon was formed, supposedly millions of years ago. However, since the canyon has kept the two populations apart for so long, the differences between them should show what millions of years of evolution will do to the squirrels. There are minor differences between the squirrels on the north rim and the south rim. However, these differences are not even enough to classify them as separate species. The north rim squirrels have a white tail and a black belly. The south rim squirrels have a white belly and a dark tail. However, many on the north rim have coloration more like those on the south, while many on the south rim are colored more like those on the north. Creation scientist Dr. John Meyer has carefully studied the squirrels. He has concluded that the squirrels on the north and south rim are actually one population that has a complete range of fur colors. According to a law of evolution accepted by evolutionists, there should be a much larger difference between the north and south squirrels if the Grand Canyon is really millions of years old. The conclusion must be, then, that the Grand Canyon is quite young, only thousands of years old.
For a free copy of our Creation Resource Catalog, call 1-800-42-BIBLE. That's 1-800-422-4253. This has been today's Creation Moment.
Back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. So going about, how long have we been doing? An hour and a half now, Jonathan, starting at 4:30?
At least for 18 minutes.
Calendar-wise.
No, I don't know.
Several months.
Yeah.
4 months, 3 months probably. Yeah, we started at 4:30. We were getting so many calls, we were leaving everybody hanging at the end of the program. Like, we're not getting it done. Let's figure out a way to get more. Either talk faster, which I don't think people could understand, and I couldn't do it anyway. My tongue will get tangled up and get my mirror twixt. We don't want to do that. Talk faster or get more time. So we decided, we opted on the more time. Okay, let me get everything open back up here. If you want to join us, folks, you can call in. We put calls ahead of the pile at 850-479-DINO. 850-479-3466, extension 136. Or instant messages, AOL, instant message, Dr. Dino Live. Here's a instant message from the Debatinator. Now, who is this, Jonathan? He's written before.
It's been a while. I don't know. I thought we used to know his name, but...
It doesn't matter.
It escapes me now, yeah.
Okay. Well, I was going to do why cots don't cotton. Why cats don't cotton to sweets. That's a tongue-tongler, too. Okay, here we go. The lure of sweets is the downfall of many a dieter. Cats are indifferent to sugar, a trait that is rare in the mammal kingdom. Now, scientists have figured out why. That's where we left off, scientists. Ooh, the holy and sacred word, scientists. But all the earth keeps silent before them. Felines, apparently... carry a defect in a gene that encodes part of the mammalian sweet taste receptor. A lack of interest in sweets has been observed not only in house cats, but also in wild ones such as lions, tigers, and jaguars. One possible explanation for this behavior is that felines are unable to detect sweet-tasting compounds like sugars and high-intensity sweeteners because their sweet taste receptor is defective. Now, would that be evolution?
Well, they say later on there that this might be an instance of use it or lose it.
Okay.
So,
Mark Zia, X-I-A, Lee, of Monell Chemical Senses Center in Philadelphia. Lee led a team of researchers to investigate the genetics of taste in cats. They determined that the animals lack 247 base pairs in a gene called TAS1R2, which encodes TR1R2. Now, R2D2 has nothing to do with this.
No, I don't believe so.
One of the two protein subunits that make up the sweet receptor in most mammals. This type of gene is known as a pseudogene and is somewhat like a molecular fossil. It presumably once coded a functional protein, but no longer does so. Oh, wait, Jonathan, a pseudogene. Didn't we have somebody call in or write in or something and saying the pseudogenes are proof for evolution? It looks to me like maybe some of the pseudogenes might be examples of losing a function you once had. I have often wondered if man used to have the ability to tell which way is north by the magnetic field of the Earth, just based on the iron in your blood. Would that be cool, have a built-in GPS or compass?
It'd be cool if we could do half the things that we see creatures out there in the real world doing. You know, dolphins.
Yeah, if we could see infrared.
Yeah.
Sense could, when somebody's afraid.
That'd be cool.
Yep.
Hmm.
All right. Here we go. Last paragraph. The other half of the sweet receptor, known as T1R3, is normal in cats. What we still don't know is... I can tell you what the next sentence is. Anytime they write a scientific paper and they say, what we still don't know, that translates to send more money.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
We've
got to do more research. This is paving the way for send more money, right? What we still don't know is, that's their code word. Which came first, carnivorous behavior or the loss of the T1R2 protein? Notes senior author Joseph Band of Monell. With regard to the gene, is this a case of use it or lose it? The scientist described the work in the July issue of the journal PLOS Genetics.
Hmm.
We don't subscribe to that journal. But that's interesting. That is interesting. The cats...
Yeah, I don't get it. Why do they think that just because it has a pseudogene and can no longer taste sweets that it would change its whole entire diet? I mean, right now, I eat things that are not sweet. Yet I still have the ability to taste things that are sweet, so I typically do eat some things that are sweet. My diet is much more broader than just sweet.
Right.
I mean, I don't cats run around with a sugar tooth, you know, before they could lose this ability.
Huh. I'm wondering why nobody's ever made mouse-flavored cat food. That's what's got me baffled.
There was actually, this article has been on several websites. I was checking it out in maybe three or four different places. And they were saying this research is valuable for cat lovers who their cats are very finicky eaters. And when they get sick, you know, if you don't give them just the right thing, they're not going to eat it. You know, they may starve to death or something like that.
That's a great idea.
And so now they're wanting to figure out how to make more appealing cat food to keep cats alive whenever they're sick.
More appealing? Maybe it's a man thing, but cats don't come when you call them. And, you know... They'll come if they feel like it, and then they won't come if they don't feel like it. It just makes you want to just go ahead and shoot them and put them out
nothing
of your misery.
Nothing like a dog.
You got any cats out there, John, at the farm? Ooh, two cats. Okay. Your wife likes them or you like them?
They like donuts.
They like donuts. They do like donuts. Interesting. You should send that in to these guys. Tell them, you got a cat that likes donuts. Is your cat retarded or something? Or probably. Okay. I didn't want to hurt your wife's feelings. She's sitting over here, too.
Very special cat, right?
Cat. Okay, now back to the debatinator who writes in at the AOL instant message. How do you pronounce AOL, Jonathan?
AOL.
AOL. Dr. Dino Live, D-R-D-I-N-O-L-I-V. He writes in, creation science, hour and a half, since when? Oh, about a couple of months. Since you started with the subject of Hugh Ross, I'd like to give a rough quote for you from Hugh Ross' seminar that I went to. I actually was about to question his universal flood and was the next person in line until when it was my turn, Q&A was over. Oh, man, I hate it when that happens. But anyways, David, there's no S in anyway, okay? Anyway, The quote was, quote, "When the Bible talks about the fire coming out of his mouth, it doesn't mean literal fire. It just means there might as well be for all the good your spear is going to do." Apparently about Job 41, Leviathan, flame goes out of his mouth. Referring to how your spear will do nothing against Leviathan, I was personally outraged at the, now that word I don't remember, eisegesis?
Yeah, it's reading
the interpretation.
Into,
yeah, I know, but eisegesis. I try to avoid big words, Jonathan, just so I can deal with a four-year-old.
That one's kind of tough to pronounce, too, eisegesis.
Eisegesis.
Exegesis.
Yeah, exegesis. Someone told me that an epistle is the wife of an apostle, and their children are called apostates.
And didn't Paul have 13 epistles?
Yeah, a lot of kids.
Wow.
Okay, comment. Hugh Ross is one of the nicest and most intelligent and well-behaved heretics I've ever met in my life, okay? What he believes is pure heresy. He believes a lot of things that are just loony compared to the Scripture. He's a very nice man, and I wouldn't want to hurt his feelings, and I wouldn't say that if I hadn't told him to his face what he's teaching is heresy.
The main thing, and you told him that, right to his face in the debate that we were listening to for the past couple of days here, and you made it very clear that it's not believing in an old earth that is, heresy, or it's not believing the days or long days that are heresy. You made it very clear that it's believing death before sin that was heresy. Because that nullifies the sacrifice Christ gave us.
I'm shocked at how many good Christians have been taken in by Hugh Ross. For instance, when my brother Ross, who was a public school teacher for 34 years and retired now and drives his Harley all day, loves it, he was saved through the influence of the Navigators Bible Study Group at Illinois State University in Normal, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
The Navigators Bible Study Group were really excellent in they just simply memorized huge blocks of Scripture. I mean, they packed their brain full of the Bible. Great idea. A guy donated a castle to them in Colorado, near Colorado Springs, just on the north side of Colorado Springs. I went out there and spent two or three or four days, I forget, in the castle. That they bought a castle in Europe, took it apart, numbered all the bricks, brought it over to Colorado, and reassembled it. The entire castle. It's incredible. It's huge. Monster thing. Break time. Anyway, we'll tell you about the Hugh Ross, the Navigators, after we get back. We'll be back in about a minute and a half. Stay with us.
And the rooms had what you'd expect a bedroom to have.
It's tough for you?
Yeah. They had cutouts and alphabets and animals on the wall and toys, and the kids were there, and they seem to be serene and healthy and clean.
That was the passionate voice of attorney Dick Gagarin, who defended the Branch Davidians. You remember that incident in Waco, Texas? Never resolved, because no one has ever been called to account for that series of crimes. Truth Radio is here to prevent this sort of thing from happening in the future. We need your support. Our address is P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, zip code 93444. www.truthradio.com. If you go to Google and put in the name Gavin DeBecker, G-A-V-I-N-D-E-B-E-C-K-E-R, you'll see that though you probably haven't heard of this man, he's very well known in a lot of circles for his being one of the chief authorities on violence and the reason to fear it. He's written a book, Fear Less. Interesting title. Magnificent book. I found a quantity of these, a small quantity, and I'd be glad to share one of these with you for a very little donation to Truth Radio. This book is a secular treatment of the concept of fear, what we should be afraid of, and how we should deal with it. P.O. Box 344, Nipomo, California, 93444 is the address to use. Donate anything you choose when you ask for Fear Less, a book by Gavin DeBecker.
All right, folks, welcome back to the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live this July the 27th of 05. And we're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate. God made the world in 6 days, just like he said he did. Dinosaurs always lived with man. They called them dragons. There might be a few still alive. They're certainly mentioned in the Bible as dragons 34 times. And we believe the evolution theory being taught in our schools is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Can't think of any idea that's more dumb or more dangerous. Okay, we finished the one? Oh, about the Navigators. So, the Navigators Bible Study Group was very dedicated to studying the Bible. Okay, Nav Press, I believe, is their website, navpress.com or .org or something like that, for Navigator Press. They publish all kinds of books on a variety of topics on Bible study. And it was actually the Navigators that led my brother to the Lord while he was in college. And then he brought me down there, and they led me to the Lord. So I love what the Navigators do. I'm very dedicated and committed to, you know, to honoring what they've done for me. Okay. However, they are the primary ones that are publishing all the books for Hugh Ross, and they have publicly endorsed Hugh Ross and his teachings as, you know, this is what the Bible says. How anybody with half a brain can study the Bible and study what he believes and think they compare blows my mind. You know. Wow. Hugh Ross believes, for instance, the Earth is billions of years old, 17.4 billion for the Big Bang, I think he said. He said, did you play the part yesterday, Jonathan, where he said, we have seen the farthest star? Yeah.
Yep. We saw it.
What was my response to that? It's been 43 years.
It was like I think he said, you're telling me in front of God and everybody that you have seen the last star. Yes, Kent, yes, we have.
How on Earth could you possibly know such a thing?
I don't know. We had a PhD astronomer there, Dr. Danny Faulkner, who just, I guess, had a pretty similar response. Like,
Think about it. How can you know you've seen the last one?
I'm sure they thought that. At one time, didn't they think there was about 1,000 stars out there?
Right.
So I'm sure they thought they saw the last one.
Many people counted and tried to count. You know, and the estimates ran between 1,000 and 1,200 stars in the universe. I think they were wrong.
They counted every last one.
Counted them all, yeah.
Closer on that.
Well, Hugh Ross says, we saw the last star, and it's 17.46, whatever, you know, million light years away. And so that proves the Big Bang was 17.46 million light years ago. Okay. Then, he says, the days of creation, each of the days, the 7 days of creation, 6 days and a day of rest, are long billions of years' time. They all overlap each other.
Yeah, I found this out. Apparently, if you ask what day dinosaurs were created on, if you ask Hugh Ross that, he won't say it was a day five. He'll say day four. Because he will not say day five because geologically, if you go with human formitarianism, you know, viewpoints, that's wrong. And so that's when he starts saying, well, the days overlap, and, you know, it's just kind of a fuzzy mosaic.
What a confused man. I mean, it's so sad. I think he's sincere. I think he's very smart, but he's just been taught all this stuff. Started off, he studied astronomy and, you know, believed the evolution stuff and believed the Big Bang. And then he approached the scriptures and read it and said, wow, I'm going to make this book fit what I already know to be true. He says it's a universal flood. Did you bring that up yesterday in the thing, too?
We listened to the entire debate on the John Ankerberg show, and then we got about maybe 45 minutes into the post-debate comments.
Okay. Well, I know what he believes, so I asked him pointedly, Hugh Ross, when you say a universal flood, do you mean it flooded the entire world? Because it's so deceitful to say that. That fools Christians into thinking, wow, this guy believes the Bible. He says it was a universal flood. So you got to pin him down, which is tough. It's like putting nail and jello to the wall. But
yeah.
what do you mean, universal flood? He says, well, it flooded Noah's little universe, the valley that he lived in. And I said, he said, there's no reason for God to send a worldwide flood, because why kill the penguins in Antarctica? They haven't done anything wrong. Well, neither did any of the animals, for that matter, but they all died, too.
Yeah, there's a big problem with that as well. He may want to think that it's just some little area that was flooded, but then he's got a problem, because we look in the New Testament, Christ was referring to the flood of Noah's days, the days of Noah, when he's talking about the second coming. He says it'll be just like it was in the days of Noah. Is he then saying that the second coming is only going to be local? I mean, is only Pensacola going to experience the second coming of Christ, or is this going to be a worldwide thing? And if the second coming is worldwide, then why would Christ talk about some local event to parallel his second coming? He says, in the days of Noah, you know, they were eating, drinking, giving marriage and married.
And there's local floods all the time. You know?
Yeah. God promised not to do it again.
So then I said, well, Dr. Ross, if it's just a local flood, why would God tell Noah to build that big boat and fill it full of animals and stay in there for a year?
With birds, too, who could just fly away.
Yeah. Tell Noah to move. Okay, you got a 120 years warning. Okay, Noah, move over that mountain range, okay? And when the Bible says the waters were above the mountains, how did it stay in the valley? Now, he's got to have some kind of magical water that's able to stand up, you know, 22 cubits above the highest mountain, or 15 cubits, 22 feet, and not fall on the other side.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, too. This would be a really pathetic judgment of God. If it's local. I mean, the people could just walk over the hill and escape the judgment of God.
Yeah.
That's
it lessens the power of God.
Yeah.
And then he said, God is trillions and trillions and trillions of times more powerful than any man.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's another heresy. God is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole lot different than trillions and trillions and trillions
everlasting
of times.
Everlasting to everlasting, yeah.
Anyway, nice guy, heretic. I wouldn't believe a thing he said. I wouldn't believe half what he could prove, actually.
I don't know if he could prove half of what he said.
True. So I've got all of his books. I know I've got several of his books here in the library. Those other guys, even Lee Strobel, who advertises on this program.
Yep. I just ordered Hugh Ross's later book, A Matter of Days. So I should have that in a couple days. Yeah.
Well, Lee Strobel teaches the same thing, that the Earth is billions of years old and God needed billions of years. And
I believe he's Jewish as well.
I don't know.
I think he is.
Nice guy. I've never met him. I've seen him on TV, and you know, he's got some good teaching. A lot of these guys have some, you know, you can glean some good stuff out of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's good food in the garbage can once in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The problem with me, though, whenever I was actually, I would go to Hugh Ross's website to read things about biological evolution, because they may have some good stuff on that. But after checking out all the stuff that's talking about the Bible, I can't even trust, you know, their words on evolution.
Right.
I mean, they may have something kind of screwed up in there, and I don't want to kind of reverberate whatever nonsense they're saying. So I don't hate the guy. I just think, why are you going to compromise God's word? I don't even know if he could back out of the things he said. He's got, you know, 20 years, 30 years, whatever, of claiming the big thing.
It'd be a lot of crow to do that now.
Yeah.
But that's the right thing to do. He should.
Yeah.
You know? And if you're wrong, you're wrong. Say, I'm sorry. I was wrong. I apologize. Forgive me. If I hurt, you know, if I led you astray, I'm sorry. Here, let me lead you the right way.
Mm-hmm.
He's got great influence, you know. I went and toured his ministry. There's about, I don't know, 15 or so people working there, if I recall. And talked to one of the secretaries, and she said she's Catholic, and I didn't get to meet him. He was there, but he was in a meeting. He didn't know I was coming. I just happened to be in Pasadena, California, so I just stopped
mm-hmm.
in. Oh, there's Hugh Ross Ministry. Reasons to believe. Anyway, I'll be glad to debate him any time.
Well, he's doing good, I guess.
And he can call into this program.
Yeah,
I'll be glad to talk with him.
His latest book was sold out at the local Christian bookstore. That's why I had to go online to get it. So people are listening to him. They're not getting the right thing. I mean,
well, that's what concerns me about many people. You know, you got Gerald Schroeder, Don Stoner, even Billy Graham is teaching the Earth is billions of years old.
Yeah, no dinosaurs were on the ark.
And John Ankerberg. I've been on his program four times. He's the one that hosted the debate.
Yep.
How he's now teaching that. I said, mm-hmm. John, what? Think, man, think. You got a host of problems. You got death before sin. You got, you know, God lying in the Ten Commandments, saying, in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that in them is, Exodus 20:11. You know, there's so many. I cover all that on video number two.
Some guys doing some reviews on that debate right there, and apparently Hugh Ross, later on after that debate, said that he didn't know that John Ankerberg was an old earth creationist. And apparently that's false. They ended up publishing letters between John Ankerberg and Hugh Ross as early as 1992. And so Ross went in there knowing that, okay, the moderator's on my side, and the moderator brought the whole thing together knowing that, okay, I'm on Hugh Ross's side. So it was two-on-one from the very beginning.
I was totally shocked it was two-on-one, but I was on John Ankerberg's program probably 2 years before that, and he asked me to speak on the age of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did. And he didn't interrupt me. He just let me give my piece, and I said, here's the reasons why the Earth cannot be billions of years old. And I went through all the reasons, and he aired the program. I thought it was really good.
Mm-hmm.
At least it was fair reporting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and maybe he's still fair on those issues. I don't know. But I've had dinner with him many times. I've spoken at conferences at the Stealing the Mind conference. He used to be a speaker with me all the time.
Another nice guy.
Yeah, and I wouldn't fight him. Goes to a Southern Baptist church in Chattanooga, Tennessee. But, man, to teach Earth is billions of years old is one thing, but to say there's death before sin, that crosses the line. Now you got a heresy. Okay. Sorry to keep you waiting. Here's Adam Brow writes in. Near the end of your seminar part two, you say something about the electromagnetic spectrum. You said that if our senses were expanded, we could see what we hear, smell, what we see, etc. Are sounds and smells actually part of the electromagnetic spectrum, or did you mean something completely different? I understand the question, Adam. Good point. Senses do operate to a large degree on an electrical signal, okay? The sense of sound is more of a mechanical, the air molecule striking your eardrum, but even then it is changed into an electrical signal once it gets into your inner ear through the cochlea and all that anvil, stirrup, and hammer. Who cares? Well, being able to expand the senses to be able to absorb more, I don't know. I guess I do that kind of to make people stop and think, wow, maybe there is more. Maybe there's some kind of connection. For instance, there certainly is a connection between electricity and magnetism. You know, electricity produces magnetism. Magnetism produces electricity. And the two are, interchangeable and all kinds of relationships between them. Can be studied in physics class. So I take the point is well taken. Probably sound should not be there, but I think possibly smell would be more of an electrical signal to the brain, translated to an electrical signal through the nervous system. And touch, I think, certainly could be, or could be classified actually as a vibration that might even be similar to sound. Maybe sound and touch would be related. We'll have to wait and see. Don't know.
I wonder what a pre-fall tickle would feel like.
A tickle?
A tickle before the fall.
Why do you think this kind of stuff up,
Jonathan? I don't know. If your senses were kind of super heightened, a tickle would not be cool, man.
Are you ticklish?
I'm a little ticklish right now, but if these things were kind of super sensitive, crying, blowing boogers down your face, and it'd be bad.
It'd be bad. Okay, here we go. The Debatenator writes in, Dear Creation Science Show, I don't want to promote it, but what do you think of, don't say it if you don't want to, the Infidel Guy Show? Oh.
Reggie,
I've been on there a couple of times. In fact, I think 3 or 4 times. I don't know. Several.
No idea. I think you've been on there at least 2 times since I've been here, which is about 3
years. Yeah, I think I was on a couple of times before. I'd be glad to go on there again. I think the infidel is in for hell. he doesn't get saved. But, I'd be glad to be on there. Says, his message boards have the most vile rankings, and one member is called Jesus is a Corpse, which is ironic, seeing as we never found Jesus' corpse. Also, have you been on the show before? Yes, I've been on the show. It's interesting. These guys don't pick on Muslims. They don't pick on, any other religions. They pick on Christians exclusively. That ought to say something. Okay, is that a call for the show, John? Okay, if you want to be on the show, you can join us, 850-479-DINO, go to extension 136, or instant message us at Dr. Dino Live. Next one from Ghost 32. It says, so based on the idea Hugh Ross has about the age of stars being based on their distance away from the Earth, then does he believe that when stars were created, they started all clumped together in one space on top of the Earth and then flew away from here? I don't know if he'd say from here, but I think he would certainly say they came from one place, a Big Bang, and since all of them, most of them apparently show a red shift, from an Earth observer, we would say, oh, wow, they're all expanding away from the Earth, which is kind of an interesting coincidence. What if somebody was out in a different spot in space? Would they still see a red shift from all these stars? And I think we've been fighting the wrong battle. Christians for years have been wondering, how did the light get from the stars to the Earth? Well, for heaven's sake, read your Bible. 17 times it says God stretched out the heavens, which means the question is not how did the light get from the star to here, but how did the star get from here to there? That's what the problem is. So, yeah, Hugh Ross's whole argument is based on the assumptions that we can measure the distance to these stars, based on the assumptions that God is limited by the speed of light, and based on the assumption that the light had to get from there, here to there instead of the star from here to there. Who's on the phone there? Jonathan, we got a ring in there.
Yeah, we got Grant on the phone.
Grant, Jonathan's poking buttons trying to get this figured out. Am I still on? I'm not hearing anything come back. Are you there, Grant?
Yeah, I'm there.
Oh, I hear him fine now. Okay.
Got some bad feedback.
We got 400 buttons over here we're pushing.
Yeah, I think you guys had a conference call today and messed with some of the buttons here.
Oh, okay. Can you fix it? Go ahead, Grant. What's your question?
Okay, well, I've listened to this show. I've heard the more common argument. I've heard kind of cases supporting them. That's back age. We have blood death from the side, whenever they can come up. So, I wrote this up in response. I one day came across a certain book. I'd heard much of this book, how it complex and applied masterful style with the other magazines and stars. However, when I first read it, several pages, I also discovered that there were a few typos. Some of the main pages were stained, yellowed, their edges, everything. This all is very puzzling. Why would anyone create such a six-god work? Hold over this, I finally came to the conclusion the book had not been written by anyone. Rather come together by a combination of time and had and solved. I can't theorize about how this has come about. Finally resolved, the book becomes reached by a weak sound pitch over the edge of the table above an open book with blank pages. Every so often, the wind would flow in by openness. This will perform two functions. Drop the pen in the flow on it, causing it to stay in a different spot, forming words and pictures. Then, once both pages have been filled, then will flow the page over the typewriter. Italy, in theory, does seem to be incredulous. Often, the whole show there has run through, and I have asked myself whether I may have not devoted myself to it. I even discovered that the book I found was not the original, kept written by the author, but been copied several times and passed to the hands of several authors. However, I still maintain the book could not have been written because it was a forged one.
That's an excellent example of... Actually, if you look at how vice could have happened on Earth, it's a zillion times more complex than your book analogy.
It's
much more likely that your book analogy would be true than evolution would be true.
Got it.
Yes. There's a lot of good stuff in that book. The Evolution Cruncher is only $5. You can get it from our ministry, drdino.com. 900-page book. Get a bunch and give them away. Awesome. All right. We appreciate you calling in. That was great.
A couple other things.
Okay. Go ahead.
Affidavit.
Yeah, 400 scientists now, I think, have signed an affidavit saying we don't buy into Darwin's theory.
I got a article.
Other people can go to discovery.org if they want to come from. One
more thing. You hear about the 1,100 tiger shark they caught?
No.
Yeah.
I didn't.
Yeah. 11,100 tiger shark they caught.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's okay.
You don't have to be very wealthy to want to protect your wealth. I mean, if you got a dime in your pocket, you don't want anybody stealing it, do you? Well, if you have something to protect, you deserve to protect it. And there's a new book out. I can't tell you how many books I've read on this subject, but this one looks to me as though it is going to be at the top of the pile for the rest of my life. It's called Bulletproof Asset Protection by William S. Reed, Juris Doctor. And this is safe stuff. You can depend upon this fellow to give you the directions for a legal path to follow. All kinds of suggestions. For details, go to www.assetprotectionteam.com or check out this book on the Truth Radio website. Do it right now. Don't delay.
Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1798 on this piece of paper I scotch taped here on the wall above my desk. 1798, after one of his own defeats, Thomas Jefferson wrote, "A little patience, and we shall see the reign of witches pass over, their spells dissolve, and the people, recovering their true sight, restore their government to its true principles. If the game runs sometimes against us at home, we must have patience till luck turns, and then we shall have an opportunity of winning back the principles we have lost. For this is a game where principles are at stake," said Thomas Jefferson.
And that's the voice of Garrison Keillor, PrairieHome.org.
Segment number five, or whatever it is, doesn't matter, of the Creation Science Hour and a Half. Kent Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live, July the 27th of 05. And we've got a caller on the line. We're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory being taught in our schools in violation of the First Amendment is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. Definitely one of the oldest. And if you believe it, we're here to help. We, the doctors, in. We have the technology. We can extract the lies that have been put into your brain and insert truth. Wonderful. You'll love it. Who's on the phone there, John?
Robert, I believe, from Wichita.
Robert. Yes, sir, Robert. Go ahead.
Yes, Dr. Hovind.
Yes, sir.
I got two questions here. One, they're completely opposite, okay? I mean, one's about biology, another one's about astronomy.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, the first one's about, I'm curious about your Hovind hypothesis,
right? Yes, sir.
I was reading in Fred Whipple's book the other day about this guy named Dominique Arago. Are you familiar with him?
No, I don't know that name.
Oh, he's the one who, according to Fred Whipple, he's the one who introduced the idea that a comet caused flood.
There have been a lot of people who've come up with that idea. I don't know who their first one was. It was Don Patton had a great video out 40 years ago about that. Go ahead.
Okay, I was just curious about, you know, I was just wondering if he was the one who, you know, was the first to introduce that idea.
Yeah, I mentioned at the beginning of my seminar, I say a lot of people have influenced my thinking on this, and I'm not sure where any idea is original from, but, so I'll call it the Hovind theory so I can take the blame if it's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, I was just wondering, I was, you know, curious, I was trying to get a trace, you know, back onto it, on the beginnings of it.
Well, there's a book called The Biblical Flood and the Ice Epic. My library, but it may take me a minute to find it. Okay. Light blue and white cover. This book was written, published 1960-something. He's one of the first ones that I'm aware of to teach the idea that Earth had a near miss with an ice comet. Here it is, The Biblical Flood and the Ice Epic. Written by Donald Patton, P-A-T-T-E-N.
Oh, Donald Patton.
Well, there are two Don Pattons. There's one in Texas. That's Donald R. Patton. This one is
okay.
Donald Wesley Patton. And Donald Wesley Patton, I believe, lives someplace in Oregon, I believe, West Coast.
Yeah.
Okay? Biblical Flood and the Ice Epic, 1960.
The book was published in... Published by Pacific Meridian Publishing Company in Seattle in 66.
Okay.
So
yeah,
I was...
I know Malcolm Bowden, he did some work on that, too. His work, or, yeah, I forget the name of the book right now. But Malcolm Bowden, he's another one. 1998, he wrote a book about the same thing. So.
Right.
But anyway.
That's why I said there have been many people who've written on this topic, and various theories exist out there among Christians, I guess, of what caused the flood.
Yeah.
And I guess mine's a little bit eclectic. I put together a variety of people's theories that I think Walt Brown is right on the money on a couple of things that he believes. Walt Brown, his creationscience.com. Have you seen his video clip on the flood?
No, I haven't. I mean to get his book, but I haven't got it yet. So.
Now, I would differ with him on a couple of things. He does not believe there was a canopy before the flood. I think there had to be for all kinds of biblical and scientific reasons.
Yeah.
But he's still a great guy, a good friend of mine, and highly recommend his stuff.
Okay. Well, in that book by Fred Whipple, it's called The Mystery of Comets.
Okay.
And, yeah, and one of his, he talks about a chapter in that book called, in one of Dominique's books, it's called The Was the Deluge Caused by a Comet? So he doesn't give a reference, you know, for the book, but he says that, I guess there's a chapter in there called "Was the Deluge Caused by a Comet?" So,
okay. Now, here's one thing to watch out for.
Yeah.
Some of the books that I've read talking about the comet causing the flood,
mm-hmm.
all they say is the comet upset the gravitational pull a little bit and pulled the water up over the continent.
Okay.
Now that, of course, does not fit the biblical description of the Earth being underwater for 5 months.
Right.
I mean, that would pull the water up for maybe a few days, but it's all going to run back off, you know? So it's not going to work. The problems are, the Bible says in Psalm 104, after the flood was over, the mountains arose and the valleys sank down,
and
water rushed off.
Right.
And in Psalm 33 and in Psalm 136, the Bible says the earth was founded or built on top of the water, and the water that was in the crust actually came gushing forth when the fountains of the deep broke open. So most of the flood water came from inside the earth. And
right.
so the comet theory may or may not tie in with that. But the idea, most of them I've seen, try to simply take the existing oceans and wash it up over the planet and call that the flood. That's not going to work.
Right.
All right?
All right. Now, moving on to this next question. It's about parrots with the convolutions. Paul Broca... He discovered Broca's convolution, right?
Right, that part of the brain that relates to speech, right?
Right. Now, monkeys don't have that in their brains, right?
Correct.
Okay, what about parrots?
That's a good
question. Any other exotic birds?
I have no clue. Alan Fiducia would probably know. University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
Okay.
He's probably one of the world's experts on bird anatomy, and he's an evolutionist. But
okay.
He definitely would know the answer. That's a good question. If you find out, let me know.
Okay.
Super.
I know they have this, I was reading this one book about parrots, and they said it's, they have a certain, you know, area, like the larynx in our vocals,
right.
You know, for our vocals, and it's called a different word, like a pharynx or something, you know, and it said that gives us the ability to speak.
Huh.
So. But it didn't say nothing on any kind of convolutions or anything in his mind. I didn't, you know.
See,
I couldn't find a bird anatomy book.
I don't know. Broca's convolution allows for a lot of things relating to speech, if I recall.
Yeah.
You know, speech is more than just repeating a sound. You know, a tape recorder can do that.
Right.
It's, you know, it has to do with understanding what the sound means. And, I don't know the answer to that question. Find out, let me know. All right?
All righty.
Hey,
good.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right, folks, if you want to call in and be on the program, 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or 877-479-DINO. That's 3466 if you alphabetically challenge folks. And then go to extension 136. Or you can instant message us at Dr. Dino Live. Jonathan, I just rolled over my cord.
Uh-oh.
That didn't break anything, did it?
Nope.
Okay. Here we go. The Debatinator writes in, Dear Creation Science Show, I don't want to promote it. Oh, we did that already. Infidel guy. Jesus corpse. Yeah, I did that. Okay. Here we go. Ghost 32. So based on the idea that Hugh Ross has about the age of the stars being based on their distance away.
One more down. We already did that one right there, I think. The Hugh Ross one? We're down
Farpost,
I believe.
Wow, the debate-nator again. Hugh Ross types say that Noah was a prophet and his purpose was to preach while he was building the ark. Yes. I asked Hugh Ross, why did God tell Noah to build that big boat and stay in there for a year? And he said, Noah, that was his platform. Every preacher needs a platform to preach from. And so he built that 450-foot-long boat or 500-foot-long boat, filled it full of animals, and stood on there so people would come listen to him preach. I wonder if they're dumb in any other area.
Yeah, there are many times when Christ was preaching, he didn't use a platform. I mean, I just watched on television the other day the actual architecture of these Old Testament synagogues, the old synagogues. I mean, they don't have platforms where the guy's preaching. It's just you're in a room.
Right.
You know, I mean, whenever he preached from a... You know, if God wanted me to preach from a mansion, I wouldn't mind it. I mean, that boat was huge.
It's a big boat.
It just seems ridiculous.
And 500 foot long, that's a long ways to run around to let people, you know...
You're spending more time building your pulpit than you are trying to win souls,
yeah.
If that's the case. That sounds a bit materialistic to me.
Plus, the time it would take to build a boat that size, you could move around the world 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
Why on earth? So the whole idea of a local flood is so dumb. Not as dumb as coming from Iraq, but pretty close. Okay. Who was the guy that called in and said, well, Hovind, you think evolution, he believes in evolution. He said, mm-hmm. You think evolution's dumb. What about the Muslims who teach that there's a rocket ship?
The Nation of Islam.
Nation of Islam.
Yeah.
Says there's a rocket ship floating around up there or something.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of dumb things out there, no doubt.
Lots of dumb ideas. Okay. But dumber, we got dumb and dumber. A dumbass would be the evolution theory, absolutely, by far. Here we go. Far Post 84 writes in, how long ago did dinosaurs exist? They're still alive, a few of them. So that would be zero. The books in school say, 70 million years ago, dinosaurs went extinct, or 65 million years ago, dinosaurs went extinct. Truth of the matter is, dinosaurs always lived with man. They were big lizards that lived with Adam and Eve. Noah took them on the ark, they're mentioned in the Bible, and there could be a few still alive.
I had a skeptic yesterday try and question me by saying, well, you know, the Bible talks about such mythological creatures like dragons. So, I mean, of course, the Bible doesn't say the word dinosaur, and why would that be, and what can we look out for with that?
Well, the word dinosaur wasn't made up till 1841,
which is... That's like 230 years after the King James was even translated.
Right.
Yeah.
So how could they use a word that didn't exist?
To be very talented, I don't know.
So they used the word dragon. Now, dragons was used 34 times in the Bible. Okay, here we go. So when did dinosaurs exist? Well, I covered this on video number 3 in great detail. Over 2 hours. On dinosaurs mentioned in the Bible, dinosaurs mentioned all through history, and dinosaurs that are probably still alive. I've interviewed now 100 people that claim they've seen one.
Yeah, which is why we find that just in the media not too long ago, there was the unfossilized soft dinosaur tissue. They busted open a femur and found flexible tissue within a dinosaur bone. They got unfossilized duck-tailed dinosaurs, jaw bones like that. You wouldn't find that stuff if they're millions of years old.
Well, Ben, what blows my mind is how so blind they can be. When they find this soft dinosaur tissue, the scientist comes out and says, now we have to reanalyze how fossils form. Well, duh. Why don't you stop and reanalyze when they form? Oh, man.
Willingly ignorant.
If they found a dinosaur, alive in a cave, they would say, wow, we have to figure out how this thing survived 70 million years in this cave with no food.
Like they do with the coelacanth.
Yeah, right.
Or the tuatara, the lonely pine tree, or all of those living fossils.
So who's the German guy that has the whole museum of living fossils?
No idea.
He's got a website, I believe. It's called Living Fossils Something. Animals that are supposedly millions of years old by the evolution thing, but they still find them alive. Okay, here we go. Street Sweeper 12 writes, Dr. Hovind, when you quote Psalm 104, why don't you quote the King James? The mountains arose, the valleys sank down. Is not what the King James says. Check it out. Thanks for your program. God bless. Okay, yes, you're correct. It's an old English phrase that's used there, just like the word assuaged is an old English phrase. There are some old English phrases that do need some explaining. What do you mean here? It's like when James says, I would have come to you, but I was let hitherto. Okay, Psalm 104, verse 15.
Some big margins on that Bible right there.
Yeah, I've got several of them. Pretty worn out. There we go. Psalm 104, starting with verse 5. Well, the whole chapter is amazing. One of the most amazing chapters in the Bible, I think. But Psalm 104, verse 5. Who laid the foundations of the earth, that it should not be removed forever. Thou coverest it with the deep as with a garment. Quite obviously referring to the flood. And it makes you got to wonder, like Hugh Ross, you know. God covered the earth with the deep as with a garment. Well, then this must be a bikini if it's a local flood, you know. Okay. The waters stood above the mountain. That's kind of stuff. At thy rebuke, they fled. At the voice of thy thunder, they hasted away. The they referring to the water. Okay? They go up by the mountains, they go down by the valleys, unto the place which thou hast founded for them. Thou hast set a bound that they may not pass over, that they may not turn again, that they turn not again to cover the earth. He sendeth the springs into the valleys, on and on. So, you are correct. I do quote what is often put as a footnote here to explain the old English phrase. The phrase, they go up by the mountains, they go down by the valleys, doesn't make sense today. It is referring to, according to my understanding, what people have told me, this is referring to the mountains going up, the valleys going down. I was preaching at an Amish school one time, Jonathan, up in Canada, speaking at an Amish school. And we're talking about dinosaurs, and all these kids are gathered around looking at all my stuff. And it was really, really neat place. I loved it. This kid walks up and he picks up a dinosaur and says to me, how do they make, M-A-K-E, how do they make? I looked at him like a monkey doing a math problem and, how do they make? I said, I'm sorry, I don't understand. He's like 10 years old. And the teacher says, oh, this Amish boy speaks part German, part English. It's a mixture of German, English.
Stutterish.
Well, that's... There's an actual name for it. He's a... Hutterite, I think, is the name. Hutterite, Amish. And what he means is, what kind of sound do they make? You know, what kind of noise do they make? But his question was, how do they make? Okay, now me, speaking English reasonably well, couldn't understand that, okay? That's a different phrase, different way to say things. When I was in Australia, my wife and I and my three kids were there, and this lady walks up with her 3-year-old son and hands her to, you know, takes the son and says, Mrs. Hovind, I have to go play the piano, will you please nurse my child? Of course, my wife looked at her like, excuse me, isn't that a little biologically impossible? And the pastor's wife said, oh, over here in Australia, that would nurse my child means just take care of it for me while I go do something.
Yeah, I heard a lot of those. Apparently you guys found out that you're not supposed to ask for a napkin at the table.
Oh, man, I'm standing there, sitting there at the restaurant ordering food, and I said to the waitress, can I have a napkin? The missionary pulled on my jacket and said, don't say that. I said, what? He said, don't ask for a napkin over here. I said, what do I want? He said, you want a serviette. I said, a serviette? I said, what's a napkin? He said, that's a diaper.
It wasn't an all-you-can-eat buffet or something, right?
No,
I don't know what
that
diaper's going to be used for.
Oh, okay. You get me a serviette, please. I mean, that's English. You know, so I guess the old English phrase, they go up by the mountains, they go down by the valleys, is supposedly, according to people that I know, have told me, that it means the mountains are rising, the valleys are sinking, or the valleys are going down. But good point. Point well taken. Okay. That's from Street Sweeper 12. Okay? Understand? I have in front of me several other Bibles. I'm going to see what the NIV says, the non-inspired version, and see what that one says.
I've got the New Living Translation.
I have to break.
The instrumental music you hear from time to time on Truth Radio comes from the creations of Jordan Philip Mignogle. To purchase his newly released album, In His Moments, call toll-free 1-800-748-5549 or visit online at www.mignogle.net. Jordan's unique, inspiring compositions of piano and synthesizer have touched the hearts of many the world over. He has, through his music, presented in one word, excellence, says Jake Rinnard of Crimson Light Christian Music Reviews. So call toll-free today at 1-800-748-5549 or visit MIEDNAGEL.net. The music of Jordan Philip Mignogle.
Ms. Magazine once said cynically, marriage is the only war where you sleep with the enemy.
With Moments Together, here's Dennis Rainey.
There may be a war going on, but according to God, our battle is not against flesh and blood. Every married couple needs to understand, your mate is never your enemy. Picture your marriage as two people joined together in a foxhole, cooperating in a battle against a common enemy. Take a good look at your own foxhole. Here's a practical test to discover if you view your mate as an enemy or as a fellow soldier. Do you focus on the negative or the positive in your spouse? Think back to those times when you've forgotten who your real enemy was. How did that impact your marriage? Today, pray that God would make you aware of who the real enemy is and that you need your spouse in the spiritual battle.
Moments Together with Dennis Rainey is made possible by Regal Books, the Moments Together devotional series at Christian bookstores or regalbooks.com.
Hovind and Jonathan Sampson live, July 27th of 05. And we're the folks who believe the Bible is literally true and scientifically accurate, and the evolution theory is the dumbest and most dangerous religion in the history of planet Earth. I love saying that. And we haven't had our traditional callers that call in all the time, Jonathan, to get upset about that. I miss them, you know. Well, I'm sure they're out there. The one that goes, Here he is, 17 years old, shows no respect at all for his elders, let alone somebody with, you know, more education. It's okay, that's fine, we can handle it, but it's a little bit, you know, point that out. I'm holding in front of me Guidepost Parallel Bible, which has four versions side by side.
Looks like the herniated version right there.
It's a pretty good size, yeah. Psalm 104, verse 8, King James. They go up by the mountains, they go down by the valleys, unto the place which thou hast founded for them. Modern Language Bible, Psalm 104, verse, I'll read 7 and 8. Let's read 6. Thou didst cover it with the ocean depth for a garment. Above the mountains stood the waters, which surged in retreat at thy rebuke. At thy thunderous command swirled away, while the mountains sprang up and the valleys descended. Living Bible, Psalm 104, verse 7 and 8. You spoke, and at the sound of your shout, the water collected into its vast ocean beds, and the mountains rose, and the valleys sank to the levels you decreed. Reviled Substandard Perversion. Reversed Version. At thy rebuke, they fled. At the sound of thy thunder, they took to flight. The mountains rose, and the valleys sank down to the place which thou didst appoint for them. So, I believe God has preserved his word for us in the King James. I think there are serious problems with the other versions. I have quite a collection of other Bibles, but there are old English phrases that need to be interpreted in light of the time and when it was translated. That's just common sense, okay? If it was translated in 1611, you'd look words up in a 1611 dictionary to find out what they meant then. Like James 2:19 says, you have respect him that weareth the gay clothing. Well, today, if you tell somebody, hey, you have gay clothing on, you're likely to get a black eye or bloody nose.
Unless you live in San Francisco.
Yeah, then you get the kiss.
Yeah.
So it's just the way things, you have to put things in proper perspective. Okay,
A couple of instant messages we did not get to last time. If you're out there listening, I'm so sorry. We did leave some people hanging. We do have time to do a few more today in the last 6 minutes of the program if you want to get one in quick. Dr. Dino Live.
That's on AOL Instant Messenger.
AOL. Or call 850-479-DINO, extension 136. Here's one from InfoMan929 who wrote in a couple of days ago. Dr. Groven, my name is Mike Brunstetter from Anchorage, Alaska. Glad to hear your ministry is doing fine after the hurricane. We are praying for you. Two questions. Do you know anything about the cult Scientology? I did some research on it. It seems like neither science nor true religion. I'm curious only because it's been in the news recently. Several Hollywood actors believe in Scientology. I don't know. You studied that one, Jonathan?
No idea.
I have not.
Uh-oh.
You know, you want to be on the program, Jan? You know, what do you know about Scientology? Is it?
Because we know absolutely nothing. So
you could. It's neither science nor religion. Okay. Sorry, can't help you.
Well, John, he's over here smiling like she could really enlighten us here.
Your brother's in Scientology? Well, what do they believe? You can't figure out what they don't even know what they believe.
Huh.
Now, Church of Christ Scientists was started by Mary Baker Patterson Everson Glover, you know, whatever. She got married like 9 times. I've got her books right over there. She taught that, you know, you're not really sick. You just think you're sick. You know, it's all in your mind. So this lady was going to a Church of Christ Scientist, you know, church for a long time, and she believed all that stupid stuff. And her little girl came over one day and said, "Hey, Mom, guess what? Grandma's sick." She said, "Oh, no, honey. Grandma just thinks she's sick. She's not sick. There's no such thing as sickness. She thinks she's sick." "Oh, okay." 4 or 5 days later, the little girl came home and said, "Hey, Mom, guess what? Now Grandma thinks she's dead."
There's actually a Christian Science bookstore downtown, and I've walked past it before, and they've got a Bible, just a regular Bible, opened up in their window. They're trying to show highlighted scripture supporting their perspective, and they'll highlight sections where, you know, Christ walked on water, or where Christ healed a leopard, or, you know, something like that, and just saying that Christ apparently achieved some type of mental level that we're all capable of doing. It's just we haven't done it. Christ found the loophole, I guess.
Oh, okay. Second part of his question was, what happened to the links page from the old website? The new website looks great, but there are many helpful links on the old site that were helpful. Thank you. See you in September in Anchorage. Okay, Jonathan, you do the website. What happened to the old links?
Hopefully they're still helpful. They're there.
Oh, you think all the links are there? Okay.
Well, if a couple of them got lost, I mean, I can go back and check the old list and the new list and compare them again.
Yeah, find out what happened for Anchorage, Alaska. I'll be up there in September. Boy, have you been to Alaska yet, Jonathan?
No. We have we used to have Adam Thompson working here, who was born in Alaska, I guess.
Yep.
Morrow.
Wants to go back.
Yeah, let's go back.
Chilly up there in the winter.
Came down here, got married to a Ukrainian, and now he has a little baby and
a family. What would half Ukrainian, half Alaskan be? Wow, that's a combination. Think about it. Okay, here we go. Lam Cheesy wrote in the other day, did not get a chance to answer it. How does God decide the judgment for those who do not even recognize the Christian faith or trust in the Trinity? How does God decide the judgment? Well, it doesn't matter what a person believes in. You know, what God believes in is all that's important. Okay? Nothing else is going to matter. People can say, "Well, I didn't believe in gravity." Okay, well, it's still going to affect you, okay? And you can say, "I don't believe the God of the Bible." Okay, well, that doesn't matter either. God will still be the judge, okay? I mean, that's the definition of God, okay? Mm-hmm. He gets to make those decisions.
Of course, it's, you know, it's not like the Scientology thing where if you just think you're not going to be judged by God, then you're not going to.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Okay. The Bartman, 47, just wrote in, I know that the Masonic Lodge is cultish, but I don't know anything about the other things with Lodge in their name, like Elk's Lodge, Moose Lodge, or even Lion's Club. Are any of these or others I don't list related to the Masonic Lodge? I don't know. Can't answer that.
No idea. In Illinois, my hometown, Mount Carmel, there is a Moose Lodge. I had no idea what it was. I thought it was just a building full of drunk hunters, you know. No idea what that thing was. But they had a nice little arcade in there, and they served Coca-Cola, so I don't know.
Well, now, if you live up north, there's a show called The Red and Green Show. Have you ever
seen
that?
I saw it.
Isn't that hilarious?
We used to record that. It was good.
The Red and Green. We don't get that down here. You get that in Spokane, John? The Red and Green Show? It's a comedy. Oh, it's so funny. You've never seen that? The Red and Green Show. And every time I go up north, Surf Channel, we get to see that thing. That's hilarious. If anybody's got some of that recorded, send it down. My family needs to see that. Okay, get in the ring in there.
Yep.
All right, yes, who we got on the phone there, John?
We've got Grant. He's going to tell us a little bit about Scientology.
Grant, tell us about Scientology. What do they believe?
Stop or heard second about here. Basically, this is what I've heard about. Long time ago, there were these two alien races. Good aliens and bad aliens.
Oh, is it the Aryan and the, I meant
the dairy or
chocolate. No, I can look it up. I know what he's talking about now, but go ahead.
And the good aliens wiped out the bad aliens. But the bad aliens here, like the Sith, now today, and they oppress people with negative energy. You have to constantly meditate to get the negative energies off.
You have to put your thumb against your finger, cross your legs, and look at your belly button.
Something like that. And
right.
Supposedly, I think there's about 15 levels of Scientology where you get for deep drinking. You have to buy your way.
You have to buy your way?
Yeah.
And, of course, you got to send this money to the leader of the group, right?
Yeah, do they
who
have, like,
a great big house that drives a boat? Got it? Okay.
Do they have, like, a payment plan? Can you do it, like, in a... I don't know, put your knowledge on layaway?
I don't know.
Three more payments in that sucker's mind.
I heard Tom Cruise has bought his way, like, right to the top.
Do you get, like, a pamphlet to carry around? Or is it, like,
the
Matrix?
Get a certificate or a special card or what?
That's about the... my knowledge right there. Like I said, it's all secondhand. I haven't researched. But that's what I've heard about it.
John wants to know, have you ever heard the expression going clear?
Going clear. Maybe horizon.
Huh. So 15 levels of, how long to stare at your belly button to get this stuff. Is that basically... And what do they get when they get to the top?
Lightness. Who knows?
Oh, the enlightened. Yeah. Okay.
My goodness, so you have to stare at your belly button while you're sitting. For some of us, we're just physically not able to be in this religion then, because whenever I sit down, my belly button kind of sinks out of sight.
That's a bad sign, John. You've been sitting down too much.
Yeah. I don't think I could be in this Scientology religion.
Or if you don't have enough money, you can't buy your way to heaven.
Yeah.
Wow. Scientology. Is that Hubbard?
Hubbard?
Hubbard, yeah. Where's that name?
Like Scient Mythology or something.
So what y'all talking about where you're not really thinking of things, I think that y'all may be thinking of Christian Science.
Yeah.
My grandmother's in that.
Right. People introduce me all the time. This is Ken Holman. He's a Christian Scientist. I said, well, I am a Christian and I'm a scientist, but I don't want to be confused with that mess. I'm not that kind of Christian Scientist.
But she doesn't have any aspirin anywhere in her house.
Uh-huh.
But because she thinks that it's not a real headache. It just thinks you have a headache.
Right, or you think you're dead, and it's all a state of mind, right.
It's just weird. I mean, I believe in divine healing. I believe that we have been given the power of the Holy Ghost to refute it on us, but you really are sick. It's not all in your head.
See, you look at, Christ didn't go around. He didn't go around telling everyone, all right, now just believe with me that you're not sick.
Cross your legs.
Yep, stare at my belly button. Now, are you pushing that finger together right? He actually cured these lepers.
Well, Paul said, I left Timothy at Miletum sick. What does that mean? Was he not really sick? He just thought he was? Or listen to the gospel.
Look at the man with the sick daughter. He didn't come to Christ saying, oh, help me out, Lord. You got to convince her she's not sick. She's tearing herself up. Girl's confused. Not quite.
Well, you got to do a Bible word search on the word sickness or sick and sin.
That's a fact. There is sickness.
Okay, I'm going to do it here. I thought that was the music to end the program. Let me find out. 94 references in the Bible to sick or sickness.
94?
Yep.
So there's 94 confused cases of instances in the Bible where they're just not really sick.
Okay, wait, go to, how do they get this program, Jonathan? God's Word for Windows?
No idea. They could probably just go to google.com and type in God's Word for Windows. And
you can go to bible.com and do a word search.
Yeah, they've got that on there as well.
Okay. But this one found 94 in about a billionth of a second. I don't know how the computers do that. Okay. Well, thank you. If you have anything more on Scientology, let us know for tomorrow's program, because John's wife, Jan, says her brother's into that. You know what level he's bought himself up to? 15 levels. Now,
what?
I wonder if you can buy level 15, like, on eBay or something. You know, somebody got sick of it, just wanted to sell it.
Hey,
I'll buy it for 25
why
bucks.
Why don't you check? Let's search eBay. Wanted. Scientology level 7.
Is that like a black belt or something?
I have to complete my card, you know. You have to buy 7 before you can buy 8.
That's what they do. It's probably like, you know, Subway. They just give you a little stamp or something like put on there. They punch your card 15 times.
Right. When I get those cards, I say, can you just go ahead and punch the last one? And then I'll get my next sandwich free. It didn't work so far, it hasn't anyway. All right. Well, we appreciate you calling. You still there?
Nope, you already
hung up. Okay, well, thanks for listening. Okay, folks, tomorrow on the program, we invite you to call in and join us at 850-479-DINO, extension 136, or instant message us at Dr. Dino Live, DrDinoLive. You might want to check out our website, drdino.com, drdino.com. We have a lot of videotapes there on creation, evolution, and dinosaurs.
One of the most important things is an article on there where you actually demonstrate how a person can receive Christ and know for sure, without a shadow of a doubt, that they're going to be in heaven when they die.
That nothing else matters, you know. You know everything. You brush your teeth twice a day, three times a day. You cross, careful when you cross the street. Take all your vitamins and die and go to hell.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Comfort's got a good stuff on his website about that, too.
Yeah.
That's hilarious, that story he tells. That's livingwaters.com. Okay, we welcome your participation in this. If you want to join us on the program, we have about 1 minute left, 850-479-DINO, extension 136. I was doing a comparison, Jonathan. I'm so friendly. I don't want to say I'm a companion. I'm not saying the same thing. We'll see you tomorrow, folks. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Who's your best friend? If you're like most Christians, you would say it's Jesus Christ. Well, at Lifeline Long Distance, he's our best friend too. And because we both have the same person as our best friend, we thought it might be good for us to get to know one another. And so to all of our new friends, we're offering you something special. Some of the lowest long distance rates ever. 6.9 cents per minute all day on weekdays, and as low as 4.9 cents all day on Sunday. And here's another friendly gesture. Sign up with Lifeline, and we'll donate 10% of every long distance call toward the advancement of the gospel. And if that's not enough, we'll also give you 50 minutes of free long distance just for switching. Now that may sound pretty generous, but after all, we have the same best friend. Lifeline. Long distance with a higher calling.
Phone 1-800-311-2418 and 10% of your long distance calling will support Truth Radio. That's 1-800-311-2418. Phone 800-311-2418 toll free and your order will help support TruthRadio.com.
Spectre promoted this trial, this UN trial of Saddam Hussein for a specific purpose. To soften us up for the idea of having the International Criminal Court.
By January this year in radio shows, I was warning people this year it's terrorism. This year the issue will be terrorism because the end goal is an international court of justice that will take away all criminal law jurisdiction in the guise or under the argument that you can't fight terrorism without a new international court of criminal justice. That's the end game.
They've just arrested over 500. 500 are being people. We don't know who they are. Are being held incognito, without a trial, without bond,